So, how long we got? Where's our destination today?
I don't know. We got 20 miles to cover. Let's talk some movies. People don't know how to drive.
Are we going to get lunch on this gig? You seen anything good recently?
Not really. All right, we got a little time, Steve. Let's do a podcast.
Sounds good.
Welcome back to Film Driven. I'm Andre Shane.
I'm Steve Haska.
And we are back for our year-end review, or although it's the beginning of the new year, Steve. Now, what are we doing? We're a little behind?
Yeah, we're a little behind. But, you know, it's Oscar season is upon us. The nominees
right.
are out, but the awards haven't happened yet, so it's a good time to kind of, once a year, we kind of reflect on what the Academy nominations are, as well as our own picks for best movies of the previous year, favorite performances, underlooked gems, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was kind of a weird year overall, Steve. It was like most of it was really crappy.
Well, you and I, we did a podcast in the summer wondering if you wondered if 2013 was the worst year for movies ever.
Yeah, well, the beginning of the year, I mean, and by the beginning, I mean the first two-thirds of it was atrocious. It was just,
it was bad.
You know, mediocrity was as good as we got. And the end of the year, kind of, they picked it up. Good movies started coming out, and most of these movies are up for some kind of Academy Award recognition in one form or another. We'll kind of go through it. Is it worth even mentioning the first part of the year, Steve?
We not only did we cover it, but the biggest thing, you know, a lot of times people expect the first 3 to 4 months of the year to be kind of weak. And that was true. The worst part was just that the summer movies that even, you know, you just want them to be fun. Maybe they're not going to be serious classics or whatnot, but all those movies are pretty disappointing.
Yeah, they really were. But that's, you know, that's all behind us, I guess, until the next batch of disappointing films comes out.
But the fall, I thought, it was the opposite of the summer,
right,
where almost everything you were hoping would be good was pretty good.
Right.
You know, I had favorites among them and quibbles with this and that, but you know, for the most part, most of the movies I was looking forward to, there weren't major disappointments. Like,
right.
I didn't, you know, some I liked better than others, but I didn't walk out of the theater being like, wow, I was really hoping, you know, American Hustle would be good and it was just a turd.
Right.
You know, nothing like that.
Nothing like that didn't happen. And then, of course, granted, as usual, we haven't seen everything that's even been nominated this year. But between the two of us, we saw a good chunk of them.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. What was your favorite film this year?
My favorite film this year was Inside Llewyn Davis, conveniently not nominated. There was a slot for it. I mean, there's only 9 Best Picture nominees this year out of a possible 10.
Yeah.
But pound for pound, I would say that's the one that played around in my head the most. It's not an important picture, so therefore maybe not in the Academy's mind is something that gets Best Picture.
Yeah.
But
What do you mean by important picture? I mean, is it a movie that makes some kind of a big social statement?
Yes, like, that's probably what I mean. I think the Academy is more interested in films like 12 Years a Slave or Dallas Buyers Club, or even something like American Hustle doesn't make a statement, but it's a much more Hollywood-friendly movie.
I see it's
kind of structured of, like, it's a entertaining caper with lots of big stars in it. Whereas Inside Llewyn Davis, while I found the lead very charismatic, I mean, he's basically an asshole.
Yeah.
And so you have a whole movie based around this character that probably a lot of the audience and certainly most of the other characters in the film want to just tell Llewyn Davis to shut the fuck up and leave them alone. So that's maybe not as noble a cause as Solomon Northrup in 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
But there are other Best Picture nominees that were on my list of favorites. What was your number one for the year?
I agree. Yeah, you know, I was a little bit torn. I felt like it was a year where I didn't quite fall in love with any picture. And I got to tell you, I haven't seen Inside Llewyn Davis. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I'm sure I'll like it because I usually like everything the Coen brothers do. I think it's somewhere between Gravity and The Wolf of Wall Street. It's a weird split there.
Both of those movies are in my like top five.
Both of those are very good films. They're both nominated heavily, and it's definitely from the ridiculous to the sublime as far as the swing and the difference between the types of films these are. But those are the films that kind of stood out for me, just in terms of both entertainment value and just filmmaking. You know, I mean, for Gravity, I was as impressed as anybody else was by the technical aspect of the film, but I also liked the survival story aspect of the film. I thought it was very economical. I thought it was, it got to the point quickly, and it got out of its point quickly. It's only an hour and a half film. Visually stunning, especially if you see it in 3D. Probably the best use of 3D technology since Avatar, and it's such a better movie than Avatar in terms of quality that there's really no comparison. So this is kind of a groundbreaking film for me. I don't know if it'll win Best Picture because it is a little bit, it's just sort of a survival. It's sort of man or woman, as the case may be, against the elements kind of a thing. Very straightforward. Nothing. It's not really, breaking any new ground thematically or intellectually.
Yeah, the knock some people have against Gravity is that it is a pretty simple story.
Yeah,
but it's appropriate for what they wanted to do, and just as a movie-going experience, I mean, it probably was the top, theater-going experience of the year.
Yeah,
where you have to see that movie in a theater.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be curious to see how it plays at home, but I mean, you walked out of the theater and you're like, that was $10 well spent.
Oh, well spent. Yeah, and this is one of those cases where you don't actually mind spending more money for a 3D experience or the IMAX experience, whatever the case may be, because, it genuinely is part of the experience. It's not just an extra cost that's tacked on, where you put the glasses on and it's really basically the same thing as you would see on your home screen. My guess is Gravity is going to lose a lot of its impact on home video. Because of the technical side of things, but I think it'll still be a good movie, and I think it'll still be a movie that'll be very engaging and fun to watch when they repeat it, on TNT or FX down the line.
Yeah, no, Gravity was very solid, and let's talk about The Wolf of Wall Street, because that movie's got a little bit of some controversy surrounding it.
Yeah, I mean, The Wolf of Wall Street is a crazy movie. I mean, it is a movie that pushes the boundaries of good taste as far as they could go. I honestly loved it. And I think, I read your reviews, your blog breakdown for the end of the year, and you and I were, once again, very close in our evaluation of the film. What I loved about The Wolf of Wall Street is, once you get past the debauchery that's thrown at you, just shovelfuls in The Wolf of Wall Street, you realize what the movie does is it sort of implicates you in this debauchery. It sort of implicates the audience in the bad behavior of its main character. Because it is, when you're watching it, it is fun. And you're laughing at it and you're sort of deep inside getting a vicarious thrill out of it. And what the film does is very, very astutely point a finger at you. Not necessarily the moviegoer, but just you, the general public, that on the one hand looks down on this kind of completely amoral, dastardly asshole behavior, basically, that all of its main characters engage in throughout the film for 3 hours, essentially, and kind of implicates you in their guilt and just kind of says, we are all, as a society, responsible for these people's misbehavior, not just their misbehavior in terms of just their incredible constant partying and the sex and the drugs and all that stuff, but also their misbehavior in terms of their jobs. I mean, these guys made millions of dollars ripping people off, literally, and they were proud of it.
Yeah,
they
and
liked it.
Part of that equation was people had to give them their money.
Yeah.
I mean, you could talk about the salesmanship, but over and over and over again, people listened to Jordan Belfort and said, I should give this guy some of my money to invest. This guy knows what he's doing. I like this guy's style.
Absolutely.
And, people complain that you don't see a lot of the victims, that the people that they ripped off and made their lives terrible. But that is not the focus of this movie. No. This movie is similar to if you took a reporter and embedded them in a military outfit. Like, the point of view of the movie is you are embedded in this world.
Right.
So you are surrounded by people who not only don't care about the victims, but all their crazy behavior, they don't feel they need to apologize for.
No.
Like, they're like, what are you talking about? This is the dream, you know? Like, what I wanted growing up is that I'm going to spend my days doing drugs and just sleeping with prostitutes nightly.
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, it's sort of the secret wish of a lot of people, not just men, but women too. I mean, you get this sort of a level of an endless party. You know, everybody wants to have a good time all the time. Those guys had a good time all the time. They had a good time at work. They had a good time after work. They had a good time before work. It was a constant party for them. And that's really what the film is trying to do. This sort of implicating the audience in this crazy debauched lifestyle is exactly the point of the movie, and it's scored on every level. And I have to say, I mean, for my money, certainly the best Scorsese movie in decades, right? I mean,
it's
so good. You know, we both talked about Scorsese before. We're both huge Scorsese fans. And, you know, for a while there, it seems like he was done. Like he was working in some kind of a safety zone where, you know, he sort of was turning into Spielberg, and I don't mean that as a knock on Spielberg.
No, that's, like, I always thought about even Scorsese movies recently that I wasn't as super high on. I mean, the guy is still a master filmmaker.
Right.
So, you know, you give him a semi-decent project, and, you know, he knows how to tell a story as well as anybody making a movie.
Yeah.
So, Scorsese as the, you know, dispassionate director of entertainment, I mean, that's still going to be better than, like, 85% of other movies.
Right.
Like, I didn't really care for The Aviator. You know, I'm not that big a fan of that. I think over time that movie's faded even worse. But that said, I mean, it's a thoroughly watchable...
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Scorsese has yet to make a bad movie, but he certainly made some...
What we thought we'd lost was a combination of Scorsese, the personal filmmaker, and also just Scorsese as kind of the risk-taker.
Right, the punk.
Yeah, early Scorsese was very bold in a lot of his stylistic, and has, you know, has been a huge influence on a lot of subsequent directors. And this is the first movie, like I said, in 20 years where it just felt ballsy.
Yeah, he seemed to be pushing the envelope. And what's also great about it stylistically is that I didn't feel like Scorsese was relying on the same old Scorsese tricks, you know, like the movie didn't have a lot of his kind of visual signature stuff, even though it certainly had the edit, you know, kind of the editorial structure that he's known for. But it was longer than most of his movies. I mean, my joke before I saw The Wolf of Wall Street, I really couldn't understand how 3 hours could be devoted to the life of Jordan Belfort, who's a scumbag, basically.
Sure.
A week before I went to see The Wolf of Wall Street, I think I was watching Chaplin on TV. And that movie's only 2.5 hours long, you know, so it seemed to me like, wow, they did the whole life story of Charles Chaplin in 2.5 hours, and Scorsese needs 3 hours for friggin' Jordan Belfort. But when I saw the film, I understood what he was doing. It really was about immersion, and the length of it was part of the thing. You had to be in the world long enough to get kind of used to it, to get comfortable to the lifestyle that these guys were living in before, of course, the movie, you know, kind of pulls the rug out from that lifestyle.
Sure.
But talking about movies that were influenced by Scorsese, another huge Oscar favorite this year is American Hustle. And that movie could have been directed by Scorsese back in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, when you saw the previews for Wolf of Wall Street, you know, a lot of people go, oh, so it's like Goodfellas on Wall Street, which most of us, you know, a lot of people I know, including me, were like, well, you know, it might be a little bit of a retread, but that doesn't sound so bad. You know?
Exactly,
like,
I'll take that.
But, you know, American Hustle, in terms of how it's done, is actually way more similar to Goodfellas than Wolf of Wall Street. And that movie, it feels mean in a way, Andre, to talk shit about a movie that's so fun.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of pleasures to be had in American Hustle. I mean, there's a lot, it's full of actors I really enjoy giving great performances. You know, and I know people who haven't even seen the movie are like, it looks like a bunch of people dressing up in wigs. And in some ways it is, but, you know, it's kind of like I love Christian Bale. So Christian Bale in a wacky...
And his wig.
Yeah, you know, and, like, so Christian Bale's in a wacky hairpiece, you know, talking, basically doing a De Niro impression. And then Amy Adams is wearing low-cut dresses the whole... I mean, you know, there are worse pleasures to be had on the screen.
Yeah.
That said, that movie's a bit of a mess, and not in a good way. My take on it is that, you know, David O. Russell's style is kind of loose, and he lets things get a little unstructured and crazy. I mean, like, I think he knows what he's doing. It's not just randomness.
Definitely.
But his last two films, The Fighter and Silver Linings Playbook, those are real streamlined stories. Those could have been, like, a made-for-TV movie, you know, in the hands of a less adventurous director. They might even be kind of boring films. And so David O. Russell's style just added some juice to those movies, gave them a little bit more excitement. The problem with American Hustle is it's not a straightforward story. It's a very complicated story. It's one of those stories where you never know who's lying to who. So it's hard to keep track of, like, well, who's conning who? And that's part of the gimmick. But the thing was, watching that movie, I don't know about you, but I lost track. I mean, forget about who your protagonist is supposed to be. I lost track just of even what the cons were. I mean, there was a time, you know, Amy Adams' character had this whole gimmick where she pretended to be this British heiress or something, a very rich British woman.
Right.
Who would con people out of money by, you know, also charming them with her British accent. And, you know, and then Bradley Cooper plays an FBI agent who starts investigating them and also becomes kind of infatuated with Amy Adams' character. And there's a scene where she reveals to him that she's not really British. And I thought he knew she wasn't really British an hour ago in the movie.
He was really taken aback. And I'd forgotten that she was, in fact, doing a British accent because it was so
it
subtle.
It seemed to go in and out sometimes.
That was a weird thing in the movie.
But so that's, you know, if you just go to the movie and, like, I want to watch stars I like parade around and there'll be some fun scenes and there'll be some jokes and, you know, I like the bit about the science oven and, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had, but if you're looking for some sort of commentary or even just a great story about a caper,
right?
I mean, it kind of fails.
This is not, well, the caper was so simple. I mean, it was, the entire caper was, you know, was based on the app scam operation the FBI did to sort of catch corrupt politicians and so forth. It was so basic. I mean, there wasn't much scam to it. It was basically they just undercover agents offered to bribe public officials, and the ones that took the bribes were busted. It was very, very straightforward.
Well, I guess I was referring more to the con that the con artist
the con within the con.
That's the part that I've just lost complete track of, and I also had no idea if they were being truthful to each other or what.
Right. Right. Well, originally the movie was called American Bullshit, and that was supposed to be, to me, that seems like a better title for starters. I understand why they changed it, but it also had to do with this sort of notion of everybody living lies and stuff like that. That's an interesting concept. I don't think the movie really explored that concept. I think it was really kind of a character study of a bunch of wacky characters, and they got kind of caught up in this app scam thing, and really that's it. You know, that's all there is to it. And the film felt very kind of like we've seen this before. And this is sort of what I was saying before. The incredible influence of Scorsese, specifically Goodfellas, I think was the reason for that. The movie just, both stylistically, editorially, and just even thematically to some extent, because it had various characters narrating their parts, you know, much like Henry Hill narrates his part in Goodfellas. It just felt much closer to Goodfellas than The Wolf of Wall Street did, even though The Wolf of Wall Street also employed some of those techniques, you know. So it was, I liked it more than you did, Steve, because I just enjoyed it. You know, I just found it enjoyable and kind of lovable in its own way. But I got to say, it is not as good as The Wolf of Wall Street. But it is a great double feature, those two.
Well, and it's an aptly named movie, because we'll see how it does on Oscar night. Every year, Andre, it seems like there's some movie that comes out that has the look and smell of, like, a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and I often say, well, if you really think about it, it's actually not. This is this year's movie. American Hustle is the movie that has the look and feel of some all-time keeper. And I don't really think it is, but at least after the initial screenings, it seems the Academy gave it a lot of nominations. The first movie in a long time that it's nominated in all four acting categories.
Right, it's huge.
And so we'll see how it does that night. It would not get my vote for Best Picture, but it's hard for me to have ill will towards any of the participants.
Well, I tell you, it did remarkably well at the Golden Globes, and I don't know whether the Golden Globes are a good barometer now for the Oscars. They've been a little bit off in the past few years, but people do seem to like American Hustle. They liked it a lot, and I think it's got a much better chance of winning Best Picture than I think The Wolf of Wall Street does.
Yes.
Because I think The Wolf of Wall Street is so, caustic and so sort of... it's a little bit harder to digest. It's an edgy movie.
Like I think there are people who feel that voting for that is basically saying you endorse that lifestyle, or even more specifically, right. Jordan Belfort.
Well, so. I mean, it's hilarious, and so much of Hollywood probably has lived that exact lifestyle for decades now.
Sure.
It would be kind of funny to see them get all judgmental about The Wolf of Wall Street, never underestimate the other guy's hypocrisy, I suppose.
Yeah, well, but everything I've read about the Oscars and those who vote for them is it very much is Hollywood thinking they're putting their best face forward to the world. That's why so many of these, quote-unquote, important pictures win. And that most of the people who vote for that, they do take it very seriously. Like, they like to think that the Best Picture Award winner is a movie that they can look back on and feel proud of. So let's talk about a couple of the other nominees. I know there's a bunch that you and I haven't seen together. Like, neither one of us has seen Captain Phillips, right? To date? Have you seen Captain Phillips?
I have not seen Captain Phillips. Captain Phillips is supposed to be good. I heard good things about it from people who have seen it. From having seen the previews of Captain Phillips, Steve, I'm going to say that I can guess every single dramatic beat of that film. I can tell you how it's going to begin. I can tell you how it's going to end. I won't, I'm pretty sure
it is also based on a true story.
I know. I don't mean just in terms of the storyline. I mean in terms of the dramatic beats.
Oh, yeah, like right now you could probably predict at like the 45-minute mark what is taking place.
Right, right, right. Sure. And that's sort of why I, like, when I see Captain Phillips in my, like, Redbox or whatnot, I'm not, like, jumping like, oh, God, I'm going to rent that right away because I can't, I'm really fascinated in seeing, what's going on.
There's a couple other ones I think neither one of us have seen, so we might just brush past them quickly. Like, neither one of us has seen Philomena, right?
No. I'm a big fan of Steve Coogan, though.
Yeah. I will say, not only that, Philomena is the most unusual of the Best Picture nominees, mm-hmm. because not only you or I, Andre, I don't know a human who's seen Philomena.
Yeah.
I can maybe spread my net a little farther. I know some people who do get screeners, but I don't know anybody who's seen that movie, but there it is. It's one of the nine nominees.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas Buyers Club, another movie I don't think either one of us has seen.
I haven't seen it.
We're both pretty pro Matthew McConaughey. Big time.
In fact, I'm predicting a win for Matthew for the Oscars. I think, like, there's so much momentum for what he's doing, and he's working, like, all this simultaneous stuff is coming
out. Yeah, it's almost like a group award for, like, the not the lifetime body of work, but the current body of work.
That's right. It was like they, like Hollywood suddenly looks at Matthew McConaughey and says, you kind of used to be a bit of a joke, kind of a clown. You were the hot young guy. Then you started doing a bunch of goofy, rom-coms. And then the next thing you're kind of a silly, handsome guy who does perfume commercials. And next thing within the last couple of years, McConaughey comes out with some, genuinely unique, original, beautiful performances in a whole variety of films. Right now, he has a show on HBO that everybody who's seen it says is like one of the best things they've ever seen on television. It's called True Detective. That's right. I think the momentum is for McConaughey. Dallas Buyers Club looks really cool. I can't wait to see it. It definitely looks like more of a kind of a home video movie, in all honesty.
Yeah.
But I am looking forward to seeing that. How about Her?
I've seen Her. Have you seen Her?
I have not seen Her.
Her is really solid. It's very, very good. It's one of those movies that is, it's extremely locked into its own dream logic, but that said, it's locked into it. It doesn't falter. It creates a slightly futuristic world that has its own little quirks, and everybody wears high-waisted pants for some reason. I don't know why. Her is... It's very funny in places. It certainly made me laugh out loud several bits. But her's a very sad movie about a guy getting divorced. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix is a... His character is... He's been separated from his wife for, I think, a year at the time the movie takes place. And very much, you know, he just won't sign the papers. That's the only reason they're not officially divorced. He can't move on. So the whole man who falls in love with his phone thing is really just kind of a, you know, it's his coping mechanism. And, yeah, it's the best thing about the movie is that it's not, the whole thing is not some huge metaphor about technology. I mean, that's in there. You know, there's certainly some bits about the limits of technology in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kind of takes, like you said, it takes place a little bit in the future. So it's the idea that you just take the current level of involvement with technology in your phone and just push it up a notch or two, not radically. But the movie is very much about loneliness and the ability to connect. And so it's a very pretty film, funny in places, but yeah, ultimately it's really sad. So yeah, I guess I was pretty impressed with her. It made my top five on the list. And lots of solid performances in it, but unless you, I imagine if, you know, you were going through a divorce or a breakup, maybe it would hit home a little harder. I'm not, so you're kind of like, oh, well sucks like, for that dude.
Right. I mean, it seems like a pretty original concept. I like movies that are set kind of in near future environments, which is kind of a fun thing. And, I'm, again, looking forward to see it. I like Spike Jonze, so.
Yeah, lots
I'm
of
sure
other
I'll enjoy it.
Chris Pratt's in it, does great. Amy Adams, again, shows up.
She's in a lot of stuff this year. Busy girl, Amy.
Yeah.
Nebraska?
Nebraska. So another movie on the list is Nebraska. It's a movie I know you've seen because we actually saw the movie together.
That's right. That's right. We sure did. And I enjoyed it a lot. I love Alexander Payne. This wasn't the best Alexander Payne movie. It wasn't like even the third best Alexander Payne movie, in my opinion. But it was a very, very good movie with a very good, like, group of performances. I know everybody's talking about Bruce Dern, and deservedly so. He's really, really good. But the movie has other great performances, like June Squibb, who did get an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor, very well deserved. And Will Forte, who plays essentially the main character of the film.
Yeah.
Right? And he's terrific. And he has great interaction with the other characters who play his relatives for the most part. And that dynamic is very good. The movie's low-key. I don't think it's... I mean, I don't know if that film really sets anybody's world on fire, even by Alexander Payne standards, which are kind of low-key, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a simple tale about, like, you know, a man and his son... Or a man and his father... And, you know, it's, I mean, the best thing about the movie is that it sticks to its low keyness. It doesn't overreach in terms of what it's going for. And I feel it did have kind of a payoff at the end.
There it is, did.
But even on that, it's a subtle payoff.
It's,
you know,
I've
read some things and I can imagine some people would watch Nebraska and be like, this movie's boring. What's the big deal? But a solid entry, and I think just on the list, because a lot of people in the Academy, much like us, must just like Alexander Payne.
Yeah, and deservedly so. He's a terrific filmmaker, one of the best, like, serious, you know, mature filmmakers in Hollywood, and really, really is in great, great grasp of his art.
There's one other one, which... it depends on where you read, is the prohibitive favorite, and that is 12 Years a Slave.
Oh.
Now, Andre, have you seen that yet?
Sadly, no.
Not yet. Yeah, I did finally get around to it. I saw it many, many months after it came out. And I have to say, I was really impressed by it. That movie is harsh. I mean, it's like seeing Schindler's List or something. I mean, you probably know that going in, but it is a harsh film, but there's a... It's a very impressively directed movie. what I said in kind of my year-end wrap-up on the blog is that this, to me, is not a bland, you know, important movie that it just seems like homework. Where you're like, right. Oh, I got it. And I know I felt a little bit like that before I saw it. Not that I didn't think I would find it emotionally engaging. It's just one of those, you know, when you're looking at what you want to see, you're like, oh, should we see Gravity or should mm-hmm. we see American Hustle or how about the harsh slave drama?
Right.
Yeah. But I did make it a 12 Years a Slave, and it's very good. There's tons and tons of good performances. And you and I have both been big fans of Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Exactly. The main think guy. That's his pronunciation.
And I did. I think I locked into that one years ago.
God bless.
So I feel
we're
solid.
Going with it.
And he is, I mean, he's always very good, but he's great.
Yeah, I love that guy, and I love virtually every member of the cast of that movie, even the ones I've never seen before, it seems like.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. As you know, Steve, I don't know if you know this about me, I am vehemently anti-slavery.
Oh, so well, that's...
I'm really against that, and you know, maybe part of me, like, I did not rush out to see it because I didn't feel like... You know, it would change my mind on any specific subject matter. But, but the movie seems great. I love Steve McQueen. I think he's very talented, very kind of original filmmaker. I'm looking forward to seeing it as much
looking forward is maybe the wrong word. But
yes, I will see 12 Years a Slave, I promise.
But that's a solid film. And as such, like, were that to win Best Picture, that is a movie that... The Academy could maybe feel good about patting themselves on the back, but I also think there's honor in that. That's not a shitty movie by
exactly.
any means.
Yeah, it's not
if
a
If you
textbook.
Look back 5 years from now and go, what won in 2014? Like, oh, 12 Years a Slave. You'd be like, oh, yeah. Like, it's legit
good.
In my book.
Good, good, good. Well, in a sense, I'm almost rooting for it. I don't see Gravity winning simply because... It's, you know, it's extremely successful, you know, it like made oodles of money, and because it is kind of simplistic, it doesn't have a lot to say about anything. It's kind of a thrill ride. I don't think it'll win for that purpose. I don't think American Hustle at the end of the day is good enough to win, and I think Wolf of Wall Street is far too disturbing to win. So I really think the Academy has given it to 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, the only reason it wouldn't is I have heard the argument that between, you know, quibbles about American Hustle and certainly Wolf of Wall Street and stuff with Woody Allen, which maybe we'll get to in a minute, that Gravity is the safe apolitical pick. That even 12 Years a Slave has drama wrapped up in it. I mean, it doesn't have the same... It's not as controversial by any means, but I have heard some theory that Gravity could potentially walk off with it, partly because it's a safe pick, and partly because I think Alfonso Cuarón is somewhat the favorite... director.
Yes.
So,
right.
But
that no longer
the
determines the yeah.
No,
they
it doesn't.
No longer
it's been
determined.
Separate a lot.
They spread it around. Yeah.
I kind of do think it's between Gravity and 12 Years
and
a
I think
Slave.
McConaughey will win for the Dallas Buyers Club, so that'll sort of cover that film.
Sure.
So what do you think about the acting categories? Is there any surprises?
Not any huge surprises. I mean, no. I guess I'm a little surprised. I am and I'm not that Meryl Streep is once again nominated for a role that...
Isn't that the law, Steve? Isn't that the law of the land?
Yeah, it kind of is. So sometimes that seems a little sad. There's always... Acting to me is almost weirder than the films that, you know, there's less nominees and even more than the movies, it seems bizarre to me to pit different types of performers against each other.
Right.
You know, there's comedic performances I love very much and, you know, is... If Matthew McConaughey is both touching and really funny in Dallas Buyers Club, I mean, does that make him better or worse than Chiwetel Ejiofor's Intelligent Suffering? You know,
right? Or the Leo DiCaprio's, you know,
comedic
scumbag.
He was great in that
right,
movie, but
right.
It's a different type of thing.
Yeah,
so usually the acting is. I'm not really outraged by any of the nominees, with the possible exception of. Meryl Streep, who, to be fair, I haven't seen that movie, but
right.
She seems kind of shrieky, and some critics I really love have ventured to say she's actively bad in that movie. Like, you know, it's just too much. But the kind of most interesting acting race that came up is Cate Blanchett, who about a month ago she was a clear favorite.
I mean, clear favorite in terms of quality.
Yeah.
She was so fantastic in that film.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Blue Jasmine, too. I actually think that's the best Woody Allen movie in quite some time. Mm-hmm. But as a lot of people listening to this probably know, there's been kind of a resurgence in an old controversy with Woody Allen.
Yeah.
And people wonder if that might hurt Cate Blanchett's chances.
I hope it doesn't. I really hope. I mean, I hope her work is measured on her own merits. I mean, whatever you could, you know, I'd say if anybody deserves punishment, it may be Woody himself.
Sure.
But not Cate Blanchett. I mean, she, you know, she didn't molest anybody, man. Serious, as far as I know.
As far as I know, too. Yeah, no, I would be fine with her winning. The two other names tossed around with her, Sandra Bullock or Amy Adams from American Hustle.
Both great.
Yeah, I mean, Sandra Bullock was really great. Sandra Bullock, I will say, I'm a little bit... I like Sandra Bullock. I think she's solid. I don't think she's the same caliber of actor as Cate Blanchett Adams.
No, no. And she's a movie star.
And she just won an Oscar like a year or two ago. So I'm kind of like...
Yeah, I don't think she needs any more stroking. I think she's been acknowledged enough as a fine actor slash movie star.
Yeah, she's a...
And she was great in Gravity. I liked her. I like her generally.
I probably
like her personally if I ever actually got to speak with her. But I will, yeah.
That's a long-winded way of me saying that if Cate Blanchett gets embroiled in whatever or some other reason, if they give it to Amy Adams, I'm delighted with that, too. Questionable British accent and all, because Amy Adams, I could see, similar to McConaughey, getting almost a, like, she's in a lot of movies, and she's always really good, and she can be very different.
Right.
I mean, I can see her play hard, like something in The Master. You can see her play almost flighty, and... Mm-hmm. Quite charming, lovely. So
absolutely, it would be like if she wins, it would be a double award for both American Hustle and Man of Steel.
Yeah,
that would be her.
She got a decent role in Her too.
That's right. I'm joking about Man of Steel, but she was an all right Lois Lane for, you know, a redhead and stuff. She was better than Margot Kidder was. You know, sorry,
you got to be careful.
I'm sorry. But, you know, there is one thing that kind of took me aback a little bit. In the supporting actor nomination, the guy who played the pirate in the Captain Phillips movie none of us have seen, so we can't really talk about specifically about it, and I'm sure the guy's very effective in the film. But that nomination kind of reminds me of, remember Dr. Hang S. Neuer? He was won the best supporting actor for a movie called The Killing Fields from the mid-80s. And that was a good picture. And Dr. Hengist Neuer was not an actor. He was a doctor, in fact. And he got the nomination. They gave him the prize for the best actor. And then Dr. Hengist Neuer really did not do much acting after that. I think he may have scored one episode of Miami Vice once, but that was the extent of his acting career. And I'm looking at the guy who played the main pirate in the thing in Captain Phillips, and I'm sort of thinking, like, is this guy an actor? Because there was a lot of great supporting performances this year from men. I mean,
yeah,
really, a lot of them. American Hustle had a few. Certainly, I mean, Jonah Hill was nominated, right, for Wolf of Wall Street, deservedly so. But, you know, I would have just as easily nominated McConaughey for the Wolf of Wall Street, too, for his 5 minutes, you know, scene-stealing performance. But this guy from Captain Phillips got nominated, and it just kind of reeks of tokenism a little bit. You know, I think I'm all for that guy working and acknowledging the quality of his performance, but the whole, like, Oscar thing... I don't know. I just have doubts. I got to see the film before I could really, really stand behind that statement. But I will say I smell a little bit of a tokenism kind of a situation there. I don't know. That's all I'm going to say on that.
Well, what about, are there some films that were favorites of yours this year, Andre, that are not nominated for the Oscars? Is
yes.
Anyone to single out here?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to talk about two films. First film that I really like that I think I'm the only one who likes is called Only God Forgives. It's from the director we both like, Nicholas Winding Refn, who did Drive a couple of years ago and Valhalla Rising and stuff like that. And, you know, he's been a favorite of mine for years. And so he made this weird movie called Only God Forgives, which is set in Thailand. Kind of revolves around a kickboxing scene, but that's only a tangential thing. It's a revenge movie. And it was a movie that was so disturbing to people that apparently it was just booed off the screen at the Cannes Film Festival. And I'm always fascinated by films that get booed off the screen at the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah, it happens more than you would think. It's actually not all that rare.
It's not uncommon. And a lot of times, they're kind of interesting films that happens to. Well, Only God Forgives is a really interesting film. It doesn't have a lot of dialogue. It's got very interesting performances. Ryan Gosling is one of the film stars, but I would say he's probably not the most important part of the film. Kristen Scott Thomas plays his mom, and she is a absolutely unique character. I've never seen a character like that on film. And the other lead is a Thai actor who I don't believe I've ever seen before. I mean, he's like strictly an actor from Thailand, and he is kind of the heavy in the film, but if you watch it, he's really not. It's an amazing performance. The guy literally, I mean, he gives a largely silent performance. He plays a very, very scary dude who does some very disturbing things to people in that film. Man, he's fascinating. Can't take my eyes off of that guy. And the whole film is very interesting because it is brutal. It's extremely violent. They show a lot of stuff that makes you want to turn away from the script, from the screen. But the film's message is not violent. It's actually, Only God Forgives sort of reveals the notion of revenge. And revenge, as a plot point, drives like 60% of Western cinema. I mean, if you really watch a lot of movies, they're all about revenge.
Sure.
Certainly in the action field. And this movie challenges the notion of revenge. It challenges the validity of the concept of revenge. It basically shows revenge to be kind of a dead end, a closed circle that only leads to more death, more suffering, more hatred. And that's a very, very, you know, that's a good message in today's world. So I think that movie was hugely, hugely underrated. And it's out on Netflix. And, you know, again, it is a, you know, physically brutal, violent film. But if you can handle that kind of stuff, I think you'll find it very interesting. And it's also very, you know, there's just a, it's a beautifully shot film, doesn't have a huge amount of dialogue. I like it. I really, really like it a lot. I was really kind of blown away by it. And then the other one that I like that I know you also like is comedy. Seth Rogen, Jay Baruchel, Jonah Hill, once again.
Sure.
This is the end.
This is the end.
A movie that I thought was just funny. I mean, it had a cool concept. They were all kind of playing versions of themselves, and the world comes to an end, and they're all stuck at James Franco's house, just trying to survive. Doesn't sound like much, but funny, consistently funny.
Surprisingly effective special effects, too. I mean,
good special effects.
Some of those demons were terrifying.
Good-looking film, a film not shot like a comedy, so it had kind of a dramatic aspect to it. And a movie that never really, it doesn't, I mean, I'm not going to say it's some kind of a, you know, brilliant, insightful exploration of human nature, but it's not a stupid movie. It's not a comedy that revolves around you know, scatological humor, though there is some of that.
Sure.
It's a movie that does have a brain. It's not an Einstein brain, but it's a brain. And it's got something to say. And it also, movie that kind of doesn't peter out. A lot of comedies peter out, you know, like the last act.
They had like the premise, and then when it comes time to actually, you know, fleshing out a 90-minute story, they're like, well, we got about 62 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And, but no, this, you're right. The movie feels solid all the way to the end. They figured it out. Also, you know, it's it's an interesting, it's certainly the most meta movie of the year, because a lot of the decade,
I've never seen a movie that meta before.
Yeah, I mean, there are movies where characters play themselves, you know, where actors play themselves, or actors play versions of themselves. Yeah. But this is a movie where basically the entire cast, like every character, is a somewhat fictionalized version of themselves.
Right.
And they leave it up to you about how real any of this is.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting that among the players, they really play with what public persona is of them. Like, Franco is played as a guy who can be kind of a pompous douchebag. And, you know, some guys play according to type. Like, Jay Bruchel is very sweet Canadian.
Well,
with all that implies.
Yeah, he's the nicest character.
Sure.
Although at one point he's kind of revealed to be a self-centered dickhead just like everybody else.
Sure, but that's his character in the film. Danny McBride, who we both love, they basically say he pretty much is Kenny Powers. and he's used very effectively
He
makes a like second act entrance.
He makes a late entrance, and his entrance completely changes the dynamic of people's relationships. I always like that when that happens in movies, when you're kind of like, you think you've settled into some familiar, like, situation between different characters, and then another character comes in and completely messes it up and just creates all this tension and drama. So he's used brilliantly, and he does a great job. And again, towards the end of the film, he kind of comes back and takes it to the next level there as well. Lots of great guest stars in the film, too.
Michael Cera, who presumably is played against type.
And my favorite, Channing Tatum, of course. I'm not going to say anything about his cameo, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
You'll remember that one. So, so this is the end. Highly recommended. Highly recommended.
Yeah, from my end, I really enjoyed this movie. I missed it in the theaters, but caught up with it later, called The East. And it's the second movie. It's co-written by this actress named Britt Marling. And then the director of the movie, his name's, I'm going to screw this up, Zsasz Batmanghali. Apologies.
I'll buy
to
that.
Batmanghali. They made a movie last year called Sound of My Voice, kind of about a cult, which is very interesting. And I think this team is some of the more original people working in, like, American indies today. Britt Marling was this actress who moved, you know, she had a job all lined up to go into the finance world, decided she was going to go try to be an actress, moved out to L.A., and, you know, she's talented and she's cute. But she was realizing all the roles she was being up for was like, how about girlfriend number two in the grade B horror movie? Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, none of this is very interesting. So she started writing movies, and she kind of teamed up with two people simultaneously. Now, she teamed up with another director and made a movie called Another Earth, which I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And they made another movie that's coming out, played at Sundance. I think that partnership is maybe a little less successful. But the one that's with this guy, The East, is a movie. It's got a really kind of crazy premise where the Britt Marling plays a woman who works for, like, kind of a fixer organization for companies. So huge corporations, if they have problems, they can hire this company to kind of infiltrate whatever group is giving them problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the plot of The East is there is an eco-terrorist group called The East, which targets companies that they feel are being destroying the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so Britt Marling's character has to infiltrate this terrorist group and take them down. And, you know, a mile off, I'm sure people can see the, like, oh, maybe the terrorists aren't as much terrorists as she thought. But what's interesting about the movie is that she starts to identify them, but maybe they are as much of a terrorist as she thought. I highly recommend it. It's, you know, it's not the greatest movie in the world or anything. It certainly is a thought-provoking, and so many American indie movies are, it's either like a crime, like a bank heist, or a small-scale mob drama, or it's a
character study of some, like, Francis Ha, for example.
Yeah, or it's something about you know, the romantic travails of people in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there's a lot of those movies, but so it's just refreshing to see some people who are like, let's not really get into that stuff at all. Let's do something totally different.
Yeah, it seems interesting. I recommend The East. Yeah, I want to see The East. I want to see The East. Well, that's all I got, Steve.
Yeah, I kind of closed the book on 2013. We got some stuff coming up in 2014. Hopefully it won't all be shit, but we'll see what's going on.
That's right. Well, that's it for Film Driven. I'm Andre Shane.
I'm Steve Haskin. We'll see you next time. We'll be right back.